this episode, there will be news injections, peep shows, riots, and of course, indie games, and maybe even more of this. Indie Game Riot, with Patreon supporters like Suzanne J, Richard K, and starring Keen Hot and Juicy Maverick. Get in on the action by visiting patreon.com/IndieGameRiot. Indie Game Riot, coming to a computer screen near you.
This week we take a direct flight to Tokyo to choke the oxygen out of you. All this murder is making this a growing adventure. This and more on episode 127 of Indie Game Riot.
Indie Game Riot!
Hey everybody, this is Josh, and we're here with Indie Game Riot, episode 127. I am joined by my temporary hosts, Tim Donnelly.
Is it today?
You all probably know Tim if you've been listening for a while. He hasn't been on for a while, though, so for those of you who are new, Tim is cool. He makes Boss 101, along with a small group of other people who are here.
Who's on the channel? Joshua right now.
Yeah, Joshua Allen in the chat is another one. Eric Hunter. He's been on the show once before, not that long ago, and you go to ericmhunter.net, not Eric
there
Hunter
it is.
Because that's a gay porn guy or something like that.
It's a long story.
Yeah.
Yes. Same guy.
Yeah, exactly. Different life. ericmhunter.net, where he has his own podcasty type things and certain blogs and articles that he writes about console gamers getting into indie games. That's what, am I right?
Ooh,
yeah.
Yes, okay. And vice versa.
And vice versa. They're both joined here, like I said, temporary hosts, because we are currently, those of you who might know that Rev, his laptop is dead, which means he will be out for anywhere from 1 to 3 months, which hopefully is sooner because of IRX coming up. So, but thankfully I have a few people who are volunteering to help me out during that time, and unfortunately Tech will no longer be on the show, but yes, it's a rough time, but we're going to keep going on with life. And speaking of life, how has your life been, Tim?
Great. Boss 101 is amazing. I know I always say it, but we're close. I think I mentioned it before we got going, and definitely the latest updates talk about it, where it's pretty much just been, bug fixing and polish, and just kind of going, playing the game, testing it, making sure it's clean, because it's basically Joshua and I, even today, we're doing playthroughs and just testing stuff, so we just want it to be nice, that's it. The thing is, I can't stand when games come out, and I don't mind a day one patch if it's legit, I don't mind if stuff is legit, but make it as nice as you can. It's just, the regret of doing some crappy job. I can't stand it. So we're doing our best. We're not on endless development, so we are trying to get it done, and we're doing a push, but it's blast. It's been fun.
So for those who may not know, what is Boss 101?
Boss 101 is an action-adventure game that's it's currently up on Steam in terms of, you can go to the store if you want to see it. You can go to actually boss101.com. But its basis was a web game that was made by me at Newgrounds 4 years ago. And it was just a shooter at the time. And I took the characters from that, made another game, and ended up coming back to the Boss 101 universe and kind of expanding it to really just make it like a game about more of an adventure and less just about a pure shooter, shooter being, side-scrolling pixel art type stuff. And if you go and look it up, you could see it's just example. Instead of just having a shooter, you got like tons of power-ups, got crazy hatchet to wear, you got pets, we got an arcade room you can play different arcade games in, we've got all sorts of like little quests and adventures you can go on, we've got like, we do have the classic arcade modes, you can play like kind of an arcade version of the game if you want, but there's also a big storyline that kind of goes through the whole thing where you're saving the galaxy type stuff, and it's got a little bit going on with your family, and got to deal with robots, mega bosses. The big thing about Boss 101, I guess if I just sum it up quick, is it's procedurally generated bosses. You go to a room and pull like a slot machine lever and make a random boss and then fight it and get paid depending on how difficult the boss is. You can reroll, you can, you know, make new things, you can pick weapons that are good against the boss. There's a lot of stuff going on, but it's just a lot of fun. Like
there's a really cool trailer, by the way, you should go check out. It shows all of the different features. And it's one of those trailers that you watch and you're just like, it's so much stuff. You're like, holy shit, that's all in one game. And
we had a review. Did you see that? There was a guy reviewed the trailer recently and he hadn't seen the game at all. And he said, wow, if there's one thing about this trailer, it's so dense with stuff. It would just take a long time to unpack it all because there's so much going on in terms of the things you're seeing, the universe and all the other things. It's like there's just a lot of stuff going on in the game, a lot of dense with animation, dense with story, dense with things to do. So we're trying to bring the best value. It's only going to be it'll be on Steam, but the price right now is $9.99, $10. So it'll be a $10 game. We expect to be able to play anywhere from, you know, maybe your first playthrough is 10, 15 hours, maybe a little longer. But if you want to be a completionist, it could go a lot longer than that. You know,
$10 is a steal, sir.
I agree. When you want to buy it, it's going to be a great value. You're going to be very happy it's $10. So yeah. There won't be any reason not to get it for $10. That's our thinking.
Exactly. Good point. No reason not to get it. Yeah. So how about you, Eric? How's your week been?
It's good. Just busy work, video games.
Yeah.
You know, the usual.
Is that the usual?
It's so typically the usual.
I mean, should we delve deeper into your alter life of your gay porno?
The gay porno thing. Yeah. I can tell that story again if you want. I'm fine with it.
Go ahead.
For this, it actually goes back even farther because I used to parade as a musician locally here in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I. That's kind of where the M came from. So, like, my middle name is Matthew. So, when I was trying to become something at this point, it was an artist. Eric Hunter is a very common name. It's, you know, it's very singular. It's very pronounced. There's a lot of Eric Hunters out there. So, I was like, shit, I have to do something different. So, I decided to put the M in there. As my search was going on about people who are Eric Hunter, I came across a pianist down in Florida. Who's apparently just a concert pianist. He's very good, by the way. And a gay porn star from the 70s. So during this whole, you know, finding me time, I decided, okay, I'm going to put the M in there. So the joke became, what does the M stand for? So every show that I did, every bar that I played at or coffee shop, the M stood for something different. So I had a buddy of mine who was a big fan of mine, and he pretty much saw every single one of my shows live. So he was the one in the audience was like, hey, what's the M stand for? So for a while I was doing, you know, just easy things like, oh, it's Matthew or it's masculine, and then became marsupial, which ended up being a super weird joke about me having a pouch on my stomach and what I put in that pouch when the cops are around and does it cover up smells.
Your shows ended up getting really intensely personal.
Yes, it was a very burying of the soul. So when I kind of pivoted to go what I feel like I'm better at, which is video games, it just made sense to stick with the M, you know, to kind of distance myself from the gay porn. Not that I have anything against gay porn. It's just not, I'm not the audience for something like that.
Sure.
I think my wife would agree with that, who is female.
Hey, man. I mean,
so
let's clear up everything right now.
Just putting it all on the table. Just going to put it all on the table.
Hey, if Rev has anything to say about it, that doesn't mean anything. I'm just saying.
There you go. See, we're all fluid creatures.
Yeah, exactly. Well, myself, I have been. It's been, like I said, I mentioned it's been rough for IGR in general recently. And I first thing I wanted to do is thank Eric for one, as well as all of our Patreon supporters and everyone else who offered to help out in various ways when we were worried about the site going down. And the site did go down for about a day. Which is significantly shorter amount of time than I expected it to be down for. And that's thanks to all of you who helped out. It's really encouraging to know that people want IGR to, you know, they care that IGR is up. You know, I've had during that time people came up to me and just said, hey man, it's important that you guys are up because what you're doing is important. It makes me really happy to know that no matter how, you know, big or small that the audience is for Indie Game Riot, that people do care and enjoy what we do. So a big thank you for that. Outside of that, I've been working on different, more content to put on the website. I started one this week called Crowd Control, which is for obviously crowdfunded games or things that are currently in crowdfunding. I felt like it was a good way to separate it from, you know, just calling it a review of a game, because you can't really review a Kickstarter unless there's a demo, and it's not really fair to a lot of you know, the audience, because Kickstarter and things like that are so I don't want to say volatile, but like they're just, a lot of times they don't get finished, you know, they're not what you expect, that sort of stuff. So to say, hey, go out and do that. So the articles are more informational and just to shed a spotlight on them, so that way you can go check it out yourself and sure, make your own decision on that. Some other things I want to come up with, and this is for anyone, you know, Tim, Eric, and anyone listening, to help out with, if you want to, is I have some other ideas that I got to pull the thing back up so I can remember what I was doing. This was it, I think.
Yes, go ahead and pull it up, man.
So, other than crowd control, is I was going to do like press tips, which I actually already have an article out about that. I just didn't continue it, but I want to. More interviews, weekly roundups, type of thing. Things I need help with is like names. So I mentioned to Tim before the show is that I personally
Eric.
Started. what?
I'm Eric.
Yeah.
So I know. You have a problem with names.
Tim.
Yeah. You're Josh.
Yep. Okay. We're good. I'm glad we're all on the same page. is that I started learning C# for Unity. So I kind of wanted to do this like almost like a dev blog, but more of a kind of like a journal style. Mm-hmm. Where I
C# in code.
Yeah, I'm writing, yep, like it's like June 14th, 2017. This is what happened to me while I was learning, and kind of go into more like how I was, like on a personal way of, or personal writing of me going into that as a completely new person into programming. I need a name for that, something more witty. like my first stupid thought was like Tales from a Noob Dev or something like that, but I didn't like it. So
T-A-I-L-S?
T-I-A-L, Tails?
Yeah, you know, like from Sonic. No. So let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because this is always a question I like to ask just anybody, basically. So you said you started with C#. Is this your very first programming language? Like, you've never tasted anything else before?
HTML.
That's okay.
That's about as far as it goes. You know, I learned back in high school some basic HTML for like websites. I've looked into things like I've messed with things like Game Maker Construct Stencil. But it never really taught me a language. It was more of like, you know, some more of the logic type things like the loops and, you know, causes.
This is how the framework is, that kind of thing. Yeah.
That sort of thing. But nothing really as like C#, where it's like a foundation, like a foundation type of language.
Gotcha.
So, it's
Tim. What was your first language?
Definitely frustrating.
You mean for programming? English.
English.
Definitely English. Well, we're using Game Maker now, so it's Game Maker markup. But the language that I started when was I used Stencil first. You know, it was kind of a code block language. It's really, I want to say it's simplistic and child, you know, it's very much set up for the non-programmer type person. And in some ways, it's, I loved it for what it was. I was able to do a lot in it. I mean, at the time when I was going from, you know, my background is art and production and some design, and going from that into code, it was sort of a nice step to get into using stencil, you know, because it's all like, you know, go
because
to.
It's visual first and then language later.
Exactly. And yeah. it helped me a lot. Like, I think now, you know, looking at GML, GameMaker Markup Language, it's pretty nice. Like, it's obviously it's not a full-fledged thing like, you know, C Sharp or C++ or C or anything like that. But, you know, it is really, and, you know, obviously working with Joshua, who is our coder and is very fluent in that language as well as, you know, the C's and yeah, pretty much any programming language. It's really helpful because working with somebody like him, I learn a lot just seeing how stuff is set up structurally. So that's been the biggest thing. I think I've learned more from Joshua than I did ever, you know, in Stencil or anything like that. Although Stencil, I was pretty much self-taught because there's not a lot of Stencil books out there. You just sort of have to get into it.
But Stencil was made by the group from Newgrounds, right? It was made by Tom Falb and them, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Man, that sounds familiar.
I'm pretty sure they made it. They made that program. It was either New. I know Tom Falb had something to do with it. I don't know if it was through Newgrounds or through the Behemoth, and then they put it through Newgrounds or something like that. But it was something like that. But you know what else is a great programming language?
Segway!
An Indie News Injection.
Are you bored with the same old games?
Yeah.
Why, then give yourself an Indie News Injection.
Thanks, Indie Games.
This week on Indie News Injection, first thing is I want to remind everyone that Indie Revolution Expo 2017 is still happening. Let me get the logo up because I'm doing my job. It is still happening. I'm also, technically, the deadline for registration, for registering your game and registering your talks or panels or whatever you want to call them, is in 2 days as of this recording, so the 16th. However, because of the shenanigans happening with the site and all that sort of stuff, I'm actually going to push it another week. It just gives me less time to get the scheduling done, but you know, I want to give everyone a fair amount of time to get their stuff in. So if you haven't already, please go register. Tim can register. You haven't registered yet. He's been in the past two Indie Revolution Expos.
Sure.
And was most revolutionary game the first expo. So everyone applaud.
Yay.
Oh, really? Very cool.
And Eric will be doing a talk during the expo as well.
That's right.
About consoles and indie games and such. So, just a reminder to do that. The other thing that I will be reminding you is that Edmund McMillen, creator of Super Meat Boy, Binding of Isaac, such and such, has finally announced the newest game that he's working on, along with the other three games that he's been working on. and that is called
The Which End is the Life, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
the End
life.
Is Nigh. The End is Nigh is his new game. First of all, you guys are making jokes before the segment started.
Maybe.
About the game called,
loosely could be categorized as humor, but go on.
Calling Super Meat Boy 0.5 or something. And I gotta say it reminds me of more of Time for Cuck. I'm just saying. Instead of Super Meat Boy. Time for Cuck. It was a free game that he put out on Newgrounds and various places like that.
A while ago.
It was a really fun puzzler. And yeah, we talked about it like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But it's a really fun puzzler. It reminds me much more of that. I mean, I haven't played it, so maybe it plays more like Meat Boy, but the aesthetic of it reminds me a lot more of that.
McMillan's—he's an artist, though, right? Like he codes, but he is an artist at the end of the day. Like he was what gave the aesthetic to Super Meat Boy, but the platform that builds off of that was what was his name? Tommy.
Tom Galile, I forget how to pronounce his last name, but yeah, it's another guy actually does the programming mostly.
Right. So it really is just. I mean, so we just have a trailer, okay?
Yes.
And I am that guy who, you know, gives the benefit of the doubt as many times as I've been shit on in my life, especially when it comes to video games. I always give the benefit of the doubt. So I'm hoping that there is something else that's going on within this game. Like I'm hoping that we get a Limbo-esque twist in this game where there's something else going on in the background that we just don't know yet. Does that make sense?
That's what it looks like to me, because I mean Meat Boy was much more arcadey I guess if you
sure.
will, in my opinion. Whereas this seems much more level by level, like more of a linear, like a little bit more story put into it than just, hey, let's beat this level as fast as possible, or die as few times as you can.
I got a story.
You got a story?
Princesses in Another Castle kind of sums it up.
Well, yeah, which you can say that about like 50%.
It could easily be true.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. This teaser trailer is probably one of the best teaser trailers I have ever seen. The fact that he's basically just taking a shit on top of Let's Players, just, I love it. Like, just seeing somebody take what we take for granted now and just smear it. Like, I love it. Like, it was so good.
And by the way, I just want to put this out here. Edward McMillan said publicly on his Twitter that he would come on this show. He said, yes.
Oh, yeah?
Well, he said yes, like with a question mark, because I tweeted at him from my personal account. He's like, send me yes or no questions. I was like, will you go on Indie Game Ryan podcast? He's like, yes. So I will take that as he will come on the show.
We'll be on the show.
So call him out. Go tweet at his Twitter account. Tweet at him at Edmund McMillan or something. I don't remember what it is.
McMillan. But
tweet at Super Meat Boy 2.
Yeah, tweet at his Twitter account and tell him.
Okay, let's see which website is taken. Super Meat Boy 2 or Super Meat Boy 0.5.
Okay. Oh my God, let's do it.
And he's never going to come on the show now after he hears this because he totally listens.
Well, no, he should come on more because the point was wrong.
Yeah. He has nothing to lose.
Tweet at him and call him out. Tell him to come on the show because he said he would.
Josh, are you drinking tea out of a 1,000-year-old cup? Looks like something that Ben Franklin drank his tea from. What is that?
Wait, hold on.
Hey, where's the pinky? There it is. Oh, it's beautiful. Wow, that is not English on the other side of that cup. It is not English.
That was a mistake. Okay.
Okay. So when is this? He's announced the game. Is there any other information other than, hey, I'm making a game, everybody?
He Tyler Glale. I don't know. Is the programmer's name? But anyway, I don't think there is a release date. God, I'm gonna die.
No, there is July 12th. So it's soon.
July 12th.
No. This year, July 12th.
Yeah, the end is the end is nigh. Set to come out July 12th. Pricing hasn't been set, but the very McMillan S system requirements are below, and you can find more at edmundmd.com.
Edmundm.com.
Yeah. Oh, is that what it is? Edmund. Okay, yeah. It is Edmund M.
Okay, well, July 12th. I totally thought it was gonna be like. Well, that's encouraging to know that at least it's pretty much finished, because every other game that he said that he's been working on has yet to make progress. From what
it's the Bethesda move. But by the way, we've been doing this, and it's coming out tomorrow. You guys take care. See ya.
Hey man, he can do what he wants. He's a millionaire. So, speaking of millionaires, or probably billionaires, to be honest, Steam has finally announced Steam Direct, the fee that will be charged to people who want to get through Steam now that Greenlight has been shut down.
Right.
Steam has decided on the lowest end of the spectrum of $100, mm-hmm. which is fantastic because that was the same price as the Greenlight fee.
Yeah.
So it works out all around, and I'm glad that they've understood what game developers have been saying and people who are fans of indie games who have gone through that have been saying, and just saying, hey, don't lock people out because they're broke. You know what I mean? You can't give fucking, what was it, $5,000 was the max?
They were that was one of the prices, I think.
That was insane. You weren't going to get anyone going through that. And I get it, because the whole idea, for those you don't know, the whole idea of it is to keep from shovelware getting in and all that crap that you had to wade through to get through Steam Greenlight, where they were basically essentially buying votes to get them through Greenlight. This way, I guess it's a little bit easier because they're, I don't know. Well, to be honest, I don't see a difference with $100, but I don't want to complain. So,
if I understand it, maybe you can correct me where I'm wrong. They introduced this new system because they felt Greenlight was, maybe a little more unfiltered, a little more uncensored. They
broken. Go,
we're going to introduce a new system. We need to really like start culling out these fools that are just going to get their crappy games on here. Well, so what we're going to do is remove the whole voting process and just leave the fee so that you not only don't have to pay, listen to anybody voting for your game anymore. You can just come straight on to Steam for $100.
Well, from the idea of it too, I think it's less to do with the fee, which I mean, the fee is like an initial gate. But I think
is there any further gates, I guess, is the
they're
question.
They're working with like the whole curator system, and basically they're if crap games, you know, shovelware and stuff gets through, is the system is set up so that it will just completely bury it. That way games that are getting through that are quality, that people want to play, are getting a lot more attention. I still question it because even with games before this, I mean, they were still getting buried. Good games were still getting buried. You know, they get like an hour of time on the new releases part of Steam, and then all of a sudden they disappear, which sucks. So I still have yet to see how this works. I like the idea of working with Steam curators a little bit, as far as getting good games to crop back up into the spotlight. I guess, you know, I guess the idea is that Steam curators will find these games, put them on their list, and therefore spread it around to people who follow them. And the curators have a pretty prominent area on the homepage, on your homepage for Steam. It's not, like, immediately visible, but if you scroll down a little bit, it's, like one or two rows, I guess, it would be there. And, of course, I think they have it for each specific person. You know, it's outside of the curation, you know, they show you games that would be recommended based on what you play, what you like, that sort of thing.
So the gate now is not the entry fee, but it's this next level of curation or recommendations coming from inside Steam.
Yeah, and back when, before they did all this, they had meetings, whether you agree with these are the right people to have meetings with or not, but they had meetings with people like Total Biscuit.
Well, yeah, he's a famous game developer who's got years and years of shipping games.
The idea was that he has a lot of pool with people who buy games, and he's one of the, if not the biggest, Steam curators to date, by a lot. I think he's the biggest one, and it's not even close between him and the second one. About how to utilize the curation process and how to make sure that good games
having Total Biscuit, Jim Sterling, and those guys go to Valve to talk about what they want to see more of is like asking a kid what he wants for dinner. He's going to say ice cream every time. Yeah. Like, why is that? Why are they? I mean, I'm not to say they don't have valid opinions as an aspect of Steam, but I did hear about that, and I saw, you know, they Total Biscuit, Jim Sterling. I watched their videos. They're like, you know, in semi-British voice. They went up there. They're like, yeah, Valve sat us down, gave us, you know, donuts, had us there for steak dinner, and then they asked us what we wanted. And I'm like, huh, how many developers did you guys talk to outside of these YouTube guys?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what their mind
is. It's a real simple reason, because they didn't. We'd heard about it if they did. I mean, what are they going to, they're going to get some guy from, you know, Kansas, some indie developer living with his mom. Is he going to go up there and say, probably not. It's like, he's probably got some questions, but nah, we don't want to hear from him. But maybe we could check the Valve hotline that they set up so that indie developers could write him in case they couldn't get there. Oh, wait, that doesn't exist either.
I was like, when did that happen? Yeah.
Oh, maybe they could have had some sort of communication, but let's just make up something. I'm going to call it like electronic mail, where you could actually communicate with somebody from Valve. Oh, they
never heard of such a thing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Let's get
people at Valve? I thought it was just Gabe Newell and a bunch of robots.
It's like a couple of them. It's like 12.
You guys don't know this, but Valve right now is made out of stacks of $100 bills. The building is, they just constantly construct new buildings.
Like paper mache with money.
It's bricks. It's just bricks.
Money and spit.
Yeah.
Like, every now and then they ignite a few buildings just to burn down to make some space for another giant building.
But the silver lining between, whether you agree with it or not, the silver lining is that it's still affordable for devs, even, you know, if you're broke. Because $100, I mean, it's still a lot of money. Like, to me, $100 is a lot. But it's doable, especially if you're want. I mean, you can save $100. You can probably get $100 from, if you have a family that cares, you can probably borrow $100. You know what I mean? It's not impossible.
Well, keep in mind too that money's recoupable after you make $1,000 in sales. So yes. Valve gives that money right back to you. So, to me, the problem with all of this is it doesn't have anything to do with Steam Greenlight. It doesn't have anything to do with the fee. The problem is the algorithm. So Steam has this idea that they can make this perfect algorithm, which automatically means they're going to fail. Because there's no such thing as a perfect algorithm. You can't look at somebody's game list and see how much they've played in game X to know exactly what they're going to like. Do you know what I mean? So like you can't go up to somebody and say, hey, you play Call of Duty for 300 hours. Here's a Call of Duty S game. No, they've already got that game. It's called Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Why on earth would they want to play that? And Tim, to your point, well, they didn't call developers. Why would they call developers? Developers aren't buying games. People are buying games. They should have contacted fucking everybody. They should have just sent out a mass survey to every single Steam user and be like, hey, how do you think this should work? Because we clearly have no idea how to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but the thing is, Eric, you're forgetting is it's not like Valve has some sort of program installed on every single user's computer that they could easily contact them from and set up a survey. If they had that, I could see that making sense. But it's not like they have some sort of instant available access to maybe like their store.
Remember, that's impossible. Impossible.
Steam's reasoning behind not having direct contact with people like that is because it's too hard.
So no, the reason that they got Jim Sterling, the reason that they got Total Biscuit is because it was a spectacle. They were trying they were wanting an article on Kotaku to show up as number one of this is what we're trying to do. The problem with those two personalities is the likelihood of them being around and being pinnacles in the gaming industry, especially with indie games, is minute compared to how long Steam is probably going to be around. So are they going to have these talks every year? Are they going to find these curators every year, whoever the big name is, to say, what should we do with our service?
I just want
to
point out that, I mean, we're not like Total Biscuit where we have like 100,000 whatever the hell followers for curators.
We're not?
No.
Eric's thing just goes off, his feed goes off.
Well, look at it this way. We're almost to 500 followers, which makes us on the curator page, which makes us out of like 15,000 pages of curators, we're on like the 30th page. So when you put it into that perspective, we're actually kind of up there.
I know. Yeah. You're up there.
Yeah. So, hey, our curator page could hold a little bit of power. And we'll take John Bain down. We'll break his kneecaps
momentarily.
We'll take him down, and gain the throne for ourselves. Speaking of things, Little Nightmares.
Oh jeez, what a segue for this one! Like, come on, man.
I lost it. I was gonna say something about them being a big game, but it just didn't come out right. Anyway, Little Nightmares, whether you think they're indie or not, they're on the show and therefore are currently indie. They are coming out with a DLC. It's a three-part DLC called Secrets of the Maw, which is like I'm pretty sure it's a prequel to Little Nightmares, which explains more about the environment and where Six came from and that sort of stuff, which is great if you've played Little Nightmares and you probably have a lot of questions about what the fuck was going on. Basically, you play this little kid called Six, and by little I mean really little. Like, well, you don't really know if you're little or if everything else is just huge, but basically
dude, spoiler alert.
Yeah,
like, come on.
Well, it's not that big of a spoiler. I'm not gonna there is a twist ending. I'm not going to spoil that. But you play through. There's these.
Spoil that.
There's these really ugly things. there's these really ugly people on board that you have to run from. It's kind of like mostly a platform, a little bit like simple puzzles, but and it's a lot about atmosphere as well.
Man, I'm on their website, Little Nightmares, and that thing is like a fucking $300,000 website.
That website's, well, it's funny, though, is that website's shit. I hate navigating that website.
Yeah, it's, navigation's terrible, but that is not like a, hey, I just got WordPress and HostGator. That is like some dude sat down. It's like, that's a serious site. I mean, it's very arty-farty.
It's very nice. It's very nice.
It's pretty over the top. Like,
well, it fits the motif of the game.
Yeah, it fits the motif of an indie developer sucking on ramen, too. Oh, wait, it doesn't.
Well, look at it this way. They, like I said,
yeah.
Tell me how you really discussion. Feel. We've had this discussion.
I know.
In my opinion, if you start off indie and gain a publisher,
you're not indie, but go on.
You're still
actually a game developer.
However, if you're something like Life is Strange or Valiant Hearts or something like that, and you are, quote, indie, winning indie awards, even though you have broken off of a triple A studio like Ubisoft or Square Enix, and they just said, hey, we're giving you guys some money and a new name, so you're still part of the company, but you're not part of the company, but you're still part of the company. We'll make an indie thing so we can make some awards that make us look artsy.
Sure. You're not indie. Yeah, correct. I agree with you. I totally agree with you. Yeah, here's the deal. Simple question. Do you have a producer from an external publisher? Yes, no. If yes, you're not indie. Those guys definitely do. Namco Bandai guy comes to their place or calls them on the phone probably once a week, and he asks how they're doing. That's a standard publishing deal. That means it's an external publisher dealing with a regular developer. It's a game development deal. It's not. You can say whatever. It's just, I worked at Sony.
Okay,
it's exactly the deal.
Look at it this way. Like, the point of publishing, I mean, they might give you some financial assistance, or they might give you connections for like distribution or something like that. So, right. What about games like Stick It to the Man? I don't know if you know that game, but we talked about it a long time ago from Zoink. I would definitely call them indie. They had a publisher, which was Ripstone, which I would consider an indie publisher. They've made some like nicer games, but nothing that's really I would consider AAA. They have been distributed to in physical format to things like GameStop and Walmart.
Sure.
Would you still consider them not indie?
So wait, you said they had a publisher or they didn't have a publisher?
They still have a publisher. It was Ripstone.
Well, they were much answers the question, doesn't it? It doesn't matter anything else. It's all splitting hairs at that
so
point.
So do you think the games that are getting money from like Devolver are not indie?
That's a publisher.
Or Adult Swim?
It's a published game.
Adult Swim, I'm questionable with.
That's just how it is. I mean, you could say small developer. You could say, hey, we have a different game or offbeat games. You could throw it under an indie brand, but the realistic definition of indie to me personally is you're pretty much self-funded and self-directed. Period.
So then,
it doesn't have to do with what your subject matter is as much as it has to do with your funding and your direction.
So Half-Life is an indie game.
Arguably, yeah, you could arguably say Valve by themselves in its own weird way is, well, I mean, Microsoft, you could say, well, Microsoft's indie because they don't take anything from anybody. I mean, I guess, but those are, you know, big companies with hundreds and hundreds of people. What I'm talking about is there's a difference when you get money from a publisher and they have a guy call you, called a producer. It's called development. It's just regular game development. It's what I did before I did this. I worked as that guy. I was that guy for like 5 years. I know.
Who was the smallest company that you worked with when you were at?
I had 11 people. I had like 11 people. So, I mean, they were little. You know, gave them a couple hundred grand or something. It was just not much.
See, when you say it like that, it makes me feel like indie game is a dirty word.
It's not a dirty word. It's a great word. It's just, it's misused. I think what happens is some people tend to, and again, my opinion, I don't, believe me, I consider myself...
No, that's the best part, because we're talking about your opinion. That's what I'm interested in.
I'm knowledgeable on it, at least I think so, but my opinion is that, you know, a lot of people say, hey, I left, you know, Sony, or I left blankety blank, and then I came to work, you know, I've got my own little company now, but Sony still pays for it, but we're indie. What do you define as indie, then, at that point? Like,
well, that's questionable, too, if they used to work for that company. That's kind of weird.
Then what's the difference if you now work for the company or they now pay your bills? It doesn't matter. If Sony's paying your electric bills, you're a regular game developer under a publishing deal. That's exactly the exact
terms. So say, I mean, relationships with publishers like that vary, like depending on how, what they do for you. So, right. But a lot of them, I mean, obviously Little Nightmares was funded because, I mean, unless these people had some money in a bank beforehand.
Sure.
But there are a lot of times where, like Supergiant Games, I would say, at least with Bastion, was not funded by WB. They were simply published and distributed. Maybe some PR. So, I mean, which is kind of the same thing that a PR consultant would do. They would help you get connections.
Again, we'll just get down to like, you're pulling out the exceptions to the rule and kind of these very, very fringy things. I'm talking about generally speaking, are you getting any sort of regular payments or lump sum payments from a publisher for your game development? That's basically what I'm saying. I mean, you could probably point out a million little, well, in this one case, WB bought bus tickets for this team to go to E3. Is that publishing? Okay, well, yeah, you're finding these really, really edgy type cases. It's like you're really, really reaching hard. But I'm just pointing out something pretty obvious, which is if somebody hands me money and expects something in return, that tends to be a publishing deal, period. Now, they may let me run free and burn all that money to the floor, but generally that isn't how it works. They tend to want reports. They tend to want some FaceTime with you. They tend to want to have some input on the game. But
that's what I was going to say. I was going to mention influence. Like, if I've got somebody paying me to make a game and there's no influence there, they're just like, we just want the game whenever you get done with it, then I would still consider that indie.
Which is what, like, companies like Devolver do. Whereas something like maybe Bandai Namco is a lot more involved.
Right.
Yeah, I think the only publishing deal that works like that one is where the publisher's called mom or dad. That's about it. Like, but even they want you to clean up your room afterwards. Like, I can't imagine there's many publishers that are just going to hand out any amount of money and say, go run with it, guys. Don't even, we'll just talk to us when you're done.
The good ones will.
Yeah, maybe. And I don't know of many deals like that happening. I know a lot of people talk about it when they give an interview. They're always like, we worked with, you know, this Croatian developer and they were the best. They let us do whatever we want. And
right.
It's like, okay, cool. Sure. Can you name them? It's unpronounceable in English. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. That exists then.
I mean, that's for me, that story, the only one I can think of is David Jaffe when Sony came to him and said, hey, you guys killed four Twisted Metal. Here's X amount of millions of dollars. Make whatever game you want. And so he decided to make God of War. But even that, I mean, that's still... Well, I mean, they were still so heavily involved with that.
I worked at Sony Santa Monica where Dave Jaffe was working on God of War, and that was an inside Sony published job.
Right.
There was no... Dave Jaffe never left Sony in that
sense. Let me ask you a question then.
Yes.
Did Dave Jaffe go crazy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
No, I'm not kidding. Because like for the longest time, he was somebody that I basically look up to because I was like, look at this guy. He's young. He's working for this giant corporation. There's he's got all everything. Like, this is what I want to become. And then, shit. What's the name of his bullshit company now?
Eat, Sleep, Play.
No, it's like...
Oh, Dave Jaffe's Bartlett Detective Agency.
Yeah, and so they're asking him about his current game and the production, and they're like, well, only the detective knows what's going on with that. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, you were out of your mind. What happened to you? Did you take too much LSD?
Dave Jaffe, if you were sitting with Dave Jaffe right now, he would tell you a story, and you would be laughing so hard, and you would think, like, this guy is a hands-down genius. I think that Sony beat the life out of him in a sense. This is, again, my opinion. I was there for God of War and the beginning of God of War 2, and I saw the you know, Dave
Jaffe. Decline.
Yeah, the decline. And God of War was a long development game. It wasn't short, and it took a lot out of the team. It was a fantastic game when it came out. It was amazing to think that when I got to Sony Santa Monica, Kratos at the time didn't have a name, and he looked like... Dirk the Daring from Dragon's Lair, and he had a Achilles brush on his hair because he had a brush helmet, and he ran like a goofy cartoon character. That's what it used to look like, and they took it all away from that to, you know,
to what it is.
And yeah, he looked like Jason the Argonauts guy. He had like a shield and a sword. It was really bizarre, but it was long. And Dave, you know, I think he did his best, and I think it just, honestly, I think it just burned him out. But then, yeah, you're right. He went off, did Eat, Sleep, Play with the guys from
Utah. It was like 1UP and
guys that did Warhawk, Warhawk and Downhill Domination. But
yeah,
he teamed up with them, and then you're right. He did. He went to San Diego, opened up the Bartlett Detective Agency or whatever it is, and then he's doing like Scribbles the game, or
which
something.
Is terrible, by the way.
Scribblenauts?
No, it's not Scribblenauts. It was what is the name of that game? It was a free game with PlayStation Plus 2 months ago.
Yeah.
It's just a third-person arena fighter game. It's like if somebody came to me out of the, like, I was on the street, you know, just hanging out, and somebody was like, "Hey, what would you consider a trash bag game?" It'd be whatever the fuck the name of that game is, because it is garbage.
Well, someone get a hold of him and tell him to do it.
Drawings. It's so amazing.
Tell him to do what Tim's doing now and just go indie, because that's the thing to do now. Because you're right, AAA companies seem to beat the shit out of people's spirits from what I heard.
Just to be clear, my only beef with the whole like indie label is that I do feel there are quite a few adopters of it that are doing it in a sense disingenuously.
They do it for marketing and money.
Well, like I said, Valiant Hearts, Life is Strange, which are great games, by the way, but not indie.
There's nothing wrong. I'm not slamming those teams or the game ideas or the quality of those games. I'm just saying it's a little weird when a well-funded company sitting in an air-conditioned office is talking about their tough indie life as they receive payments regularly with 401k plans.
Our vending machine ran out of Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Okay, so just to set the record, the game is called Drawn to Death.
Yeah.
And the studio is officially known as the Bartlett Jones Supernatural Detective Agency. God, he is a nut job.
Can I just say, an evening with Eric Hunter, that's the name of the next podcast I'll be on, would be the funniest thing I'd be on in a long time.
Coming soon to IndieGameRiot.com.
Hey, you know what? Hey, man, I'm up to it.
Speaking of things,
I've lost. I had like three different segues, and then kept going on with the dude, and I lost.
I think there's a riot.
Oh, you know what else is crazy? Yeah. This next game coming up and starting a riot.
Oh, the riot has started.
Huh? This week on Starting a Riot, we are talking about a fantastic, beautiful, colorful run and gun, as Eric would put it, game called Tokyo 42. Take it away, Eric.
So Tokyo 42. Imagine a game so beautiful that you don't want to play, but yet it's a run and gun. So from my understanding with this game, you are a man / human person accused of a crime that you did not commit. And now the powers that be are after you. So your decision to fight back is with a gun.
That you this run. Game,
well, it's,
what's that?
I said that you run with.
They're calling it a love child of Syndicate and GTA 1, which I've never played Syndicate, but I remember GTA 1. It does remind me a lot of that in a top down kind of way with the kind of crazy ass violence.
Well, there's crowd control too. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
So like the second like the shit hits the fan, like all of the NPCs in the arena or in the stage or whatever you want to call it. They all react. So there's this constant barrage of people running past you, and like you're trying not to kill civilians because you have like the enemies that you're trying to kill, and it's just mass fucking chaos.
And it looks awesome.
You mentioned it like stages. It's actually, it's like separate building rooftop type things, but it's an open world, so you can go wherever you want and do things in different orders and things like that. There's multiple ways to progress. So it's not like, you clear a stage and move on. It's storyline progression with a lot of run and gun and platforming kind of things. There are some complaints that I've seen in a lot of reviews and things like that with the camera angle being top-down isometric and that sort of stuff.
It's really pulled back.
Yeah, it's
a very bird's eye view.
And there's like this rotate function where I can see it kind of getting confused, especially during more fast paced action sequences. You saw in the gameplay like the guy jumped off the edge because you couldn't see the gap between, you know, it's hard to judge distance that way. So I can see that being kind of a nuisance. But outside of that, I mean, I saw something
super unique
about the color too.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
I don't have an issue.
Yeah.
So Tokyo 42 is made by SMAC Games or SMAC. I'm not sure how you would actually say that. The developer of this game, like the name of the guy escapes my mind, but I feel like he is known for some other weirdish kind of games, but I can't remember his name for the life of me. And I've sweat in my eye again, so excuse me for 1 second because I can't see anything. All right. The soundtrack for this game too is really driving, and it's the kind of soundtrack that I would listen to on my own time. It's kind of how I judge music in games, is like, would I listen to this outside of the game? Because there's a lot of music where it's really good for the game. You know, it's a good soundtrack and it's good for, like, sucking you into the game and that sort of thing. But then there's music that is just, not only does that, but is just fantastic in its own right. Like, Bastion's one of those games that I would say that about.
Definitely.
Or SteamWorld Heist. What about
the music's
game.
Kind of like electronica, chill wave.
Yeah, a little bit. It reminds me of maybe a little bit less psychotic, I guess, but it reminds me of Hotline Miami a bit.
Yeah.
And a little bit, probably a little bit more modern too, but what about this game outside of the aesthetic of it is something that you were kind of pulled into?
The fact that I'm going to have to play it with a mouse and keyboard, which is very upsetting to me as a console gamer. But yeah, there's no way I can play this game with a gamepad.
Really? Because I feel like a gamepad might be easier.
What? So you're going to have to slow down the action. That's the problem. Because with a mouse and keyboard, with the mouse, I can immediately go exactly where I want to go to aim and then shoot. But with a gamepad, you have to, like,
so you're saying it's too twitchy for, like, the slow analog stage?
Correct, yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah,
because it looks like one of those games where it's like, oh, it's all hunky-dory in the beginning stages, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, just take out this one guy, and then, you know, you could be 10 stages in, or levels, or, you know, plot devices, or however they measure it, and you're fighting a horde of, you know, 15, you're going to have to slow down the gameplay. And I think that would kill the aesthetic of the game if you did that.
I'm getting sucked into the gameplay on the.
Yeah,
on the screen.
You sold me on your explanation of gameplay.
I was like, is this guy going to get sniped from across the map? How's that going to work in such a, like, pullback game?
Yeah.
A little city builder. I didn't realize it was an action game or had all this action.
Oh, yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? And this is a fucking deep cut, so I apologize. It reminds me of Golago 13 for the NES.
Oh my god! It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, it's that very espionage.
Wow.
Just super out there, and as terrible as it sounds, kind of Japanese-esque from, like, the late 80s, early 90s. Well, yeah, okay. Well, yeah. Wait, that's in Japan?
Well, yeah, Tokyo 42. Oh, you're just being dumb. Never mind. It's too high.
I mean, just from a trailer, I haven't played this game. This is definitely a recommend for me. I can already say that right now.
There's some screenshots, by the way. I mean, you're talking about, like, because you were mentioning, like, the really fast twitch and the crazy things flying everywhere. It's almost like a bullet hell in certain screenshots that I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Because there are like 100 bullets flying around on the one screenshot that I'm looking at on their website.
Which is the beauty of a running gun, if you ask me, is the fact that it's always, the second you walk into a mission, it's always a suicide mission. It's like you've got a bandolier of grenades across your chest. If shit goes south, you're pulling it. Yep.
And the important thing is, for these kinds of games where it looks like death is pretty easy, the important thing is quick respawn.
Respawns, yeah.
Quick respawn, no, like,
which is what was good
points.
With Super Meat Boy.
Oh, too bad we're not talking about that anymore. But you know what we will be talking about, Eric?
Could it be the Peep Show?
It is the Peep Show.
Please give all your attention to Early Access.
This week on Peep Show, we're talking about Clay, one of Clay's new games, Clay Interactive, the makers of Don't Starve Together. It is called Oxygen Not Included. It is a Dwarf Fortress-y kind of game where basically you have these, I don't know if you would call them colonists or survivors, but basically they're clones, but I figure there's like a specific name for them that I can't think of now. But anyway, you don't directly control them. You give them tasks and priorities, and they do them automatically. So things that you have to do is like build things, research, clean up shit, literally suck up water to drink, make sure you don't die from lack of oxygen, hence the name of the game, or poisonous stuff, or get mad at each other. All the people have different traits that can be positive or negative, such as some are overly flatulent and therefore stink up the air and therefore make it harder for everyone to breathe and also make them angry. Some people snore, which wake up everyone else. They don't get good night's sleep and therefore are less efficient. Things like that. You also have to grow food, things like slime and algae that you turn into these mush bars, and it's pretty
mush kind of bars.
Miserable existence for everyone. everyone involved. They run on like mouse wheels for generating power, things like that. You have to make the place nice so they're happy. Very interesting clay kind of aesthetic too that you see from Don't Starve, but a little bit less dark, obviously, since it's not, you know, in that kind of creepy.
Yeah, the art style is very them.
Yeah,
it's terrible as that is to say.
You don't like their art style?
No, I do, but it's like, oh, well, how would you describe the graphics? Like their other games. Like, that's just a dumb thing to say to me.
Well, it's kind of like, I mean, the Behemoth has the same kind of thing, and so does Supergiant and all them. But anyway, yeah, it's a really fun. It's a really fun game for those of you that like kind of
resource
those,
management.
Resource management, the kind of micro control of what's going on in your, I guess, colony. This would be. You're seeing on the
gameplay.
You're
also the monsters who like Excitebike.
Yeah, it's
disgusting.
you're seeing on gameplay now, like some of the there's like a blue shading and a red shading. There's some like physics involved with water and gas. Whatever the poisonous gas is that you can't breathe, it sinks down. The oxygen floats above, so you kind of have to like work your way as you're digging into this asteroid that you're on. To make sure that the oxygen is up where all your people are going to be, and you slowly leak out the bad stuff through the bottom. Last I've checked this, because it is still early access, hence the Peep Show feature, is that they don't have it quite set up to the point where you can self-sustain fully. So therefore, you will eventually starve because basically the asteroid will run out of resources. Such as the algae.
Oh, okay.
There's also like grubs or whatever that you can eat. But they're working on making it so that it's self-sustainable and that you're just not ultimately doomed.
And then you can essentially just move on to a new asteroid, I guess, and start over.
Yeah, but I think the point...
There's
the point
an end is, to the game.
Well, right, yeah. I mean, right now, the point of it is that they will make it so that you can sustain yourself. But I mean, who knows? I mean, it is early access. You have to, you know, follow their dev blogs and everything, their announcements.
Right.
On Steam. as far as their plans go, and actually, I mean, I have to imagine that it's going to not be too much longer. I mean, it was in alpha last I checked; it might be in beta now. But because I mean, they just at E3 they just announced another game, I think. So I mean, I guess they're at this point they made a lot of money from Don't Starve, so maybe they have enough people to work on multiple games. But. I mean, hopefully they're not trying to get too overly ambitious between the two games, and they'll make it all good. And also, the other part of the reason that you can't self-sustain at this point is because every so often there's like this gate that you see on there that these clones will pop out of. So you get new people like forced on you every so often. So you kind of have to plan for that as well. any questions about that?
No, I mean, it's
looks cool.
It looks super involved.
Are you not a
it's
fan
not
of
a game for me. I played Space Base DF9 for the longest time, which is a
is that the one I've never got finished?
So if
that
you
was,
ask Double,
that's the not this company, right? Was it the Tim Schafer game? Was, no.
Yeah. So if you ask Double Fine, the game was finished per them, but then they gave basically the reins over to the community to quote unquote finish it or make it better. Or it was a weird.
A lot of people got pissed off at that. I just remember.
Yeah. Right. I will say there is a, I'm trying to find his name, but the guy who, Jamie Chang, is that his name? Okay. And he's, oh, it is. Okay. He's the founder of Clay Entertainment. He's got a pretty good talk on another podcast about Don't Starve and how you can, when you listen to the podcast, it's basically just a, this is my life as an indie game developer. You can hear him making this game in his head, or he's basically talking about this game, but by not talking about it, it's interesting to kind of put the pieces together.
Okay. Also, just point out, I forgot to mention Tokyo 42. That is $20 on Steam. This is $24.99 early access.
Yeah.
And it is only for Windows currently. I'm not sure if they're planning on making it for Mac and Linux as well. Let me see if there's any other. I was looking to see what version is it right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at that thing too. It looks.
I see a bunch of hot fixes.
It's cheap. You know what? When I first saw it, I thought that it might be a multiplayer, like a co-op game, which kind of made me excited. It's not. It says single player on their Steam page, but.
Right.
I thought for a second, if this was a co-op game, I would be in on this thing. It looks fantastic. I mean, for that kind of a... I mean, I guess the I don't know if RimWorld or any of those other Dwarf Fortress-y type games are co-op, but this looks... This would be fun to play with somebody else, like, just to have the craziness. I mean, you guys, you do play Terraria, or you never have played Terraria?
Yeah, I play Terraria.
I own Terraria. I just don't want to play it.
Playing a co-op is just so much fun. Like, I don't know, there's something about building a little base and...
I'm kind of
it's
excited
not,
about it's, that for
it's not life or death. Terraria is not a life or death game like this is, but it's
right.
Awesome. It's just a fun game to do that.
Well, yeah, that was the big thing about with Don't Starve Again. That made it the multiplayer where you had to make a team. It was like, okay, now we have to work with each other to make this work. It was a cooperative, not a counteroperative kind of style game. Yeah,
I gotta play Terraria with people that know what they're doing at some point. I have never learned that game.
There is no such person who knows how to play Terraria. I'm just gonna say that.
It's one of those games. You know what we do know?
How to you do. Know what we do know?
You know yeah. what we do know how to do? You know?
Is it the free fun?
It is free fun.
Oh,
you're on it today.
Free fun.
This week on Free Fun, we're talking about a game called Growing Adventure by Frankie Smile Show on Itch.io. And basically, the concept of it is it was made for Ludum Dare. By the way,
is that how you pronounce that?
See, I always say.
See, I'm
dare.
Not the only one. I am
I always
not
say
the only
Ludum
one.
Dare. Why is it not that?
Ludum Dare. That's what I would say.
The first time we talked about this, that jam. on this show, the very first time, I got so much shit for calling it Ludum Dare. But apparently, it's called Ludum Dare.
Really?
I don't
That's
fucking know.
Way too hoity-toity. And when you say so much shit, do you mean one 15-year-old tweeted you?
No.
That like, sounds like French. Are
no,
you
like
speaking
Rev
French,
Tech
though?
And the entire audience. Oh. Like, anyway.
Still, that's two 15-year-olds tweeting you.
So, a growing adventure. The point of it is that you start off in this little area, and as you explore, it opens up more and more of the map. Hence the name, A Growing Adventure, because the map grows based on what you do. You fight the enemies, you discover things like inns, all that sort of stuff. Entirely controlled by arrow keys, so it's not like any kind of skill-based attacking or anything like that. It's just your stats against theirs, and you just push into them until they're dead, like the world's worst mosh pit concert, I guess. So you see there that on the gameplay right now that they defeat the slime and have discovered what's beyond it. Hence, the inn is then appearing there. So I thought it was a really cool concept. especially for a 48-hour game jam game. Pretty fleshed out. I would like to see this fully developed if they're willing.
Right. So I played this game for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I feel like I beat it.
Is there an end game?
So there's not. There is no end game. I defeated every enemy on that I could discover. So I discovered the entire map, and I beat every enemy that was on screen, with the exception of a chest that I realized after hitting it 20 times lost 1 pixel of damage. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to just sit here and keep pressing this fucking arrow key.
Do you think they're fucking with you, or do you think it was a bug?
I think they were just fucking with me, because it's right next to what would be considered the final boss of the game, which is basically like a big bum rush of bosses. This game does a lot of things that really pique my interest. The first thing is it's very roguelike, so I don't think the elements themselves are very randomized, but it feels like it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Random based on what you choose to do.
Right, yeah. The other thing that's very intriguing to me is it satisfies my game within a game, which is discovering the map. That is one of my most favorite games to play in any game, is to uncover the map.
You're the explorer.
Yes, like, just...
Did you just go yes?
Yes, Vince! It's a 48-hour game, so it has its problems. One of them being... You level your character up far too quickly for the amount of enemies that you fight on screen, so the enemies don't level up with you, or there's not more powerful enemies at the end of the game, if that makes sense. So you fight goblins and snakes and slimes, and they all stay the same in terms of points and that kind of thing. The other big issue I have with the game is, as you can see, you have to touch the outer edges of the game. Say a second countdown of the blue square, you lose a hit point every time you discover a new square.
Is that a bug, or is that like a mechanic?
Originally I think it was an oversight. I don't think he realized that was what was happening, but I think at the end of the day what it ends up being is just a deterrent to make the game longer and or harder, because there are ends where you can spend gold to get more health.
Right.
But at the end of the day, there's no penalty for dying. You just immediately start at the start point with full health, and there's no penalty. You don't lose gold. You don't lose progress or anything.
Well, I mentioned, seeing this fleshed out more. On his Itch.io page, he does say that he's working on a final polished version of the game with a bigger world map, tweaked level design, more varied enemies, a few quests, and better treasure. So maybe these are things that will get... worked out as time goes. So,
and I hope so too, because this is definitely a game that I feel like I would want to play. Like I think the environment is interesting. I think the character, although you have no real connection to, there's no story or anything, I think he's just an interesting character. It's an interesting sprite to look at.
It would be cool if they could figure out to make this procedurally generated and balanced at the same time.
Right. Yeah, cool. Much like a roguelike is,
yeah,
for the most part, like a net hack or something like that. The only other thing I was hoping for, because for this being a 48-hour game, the map is ginormous, but there's no way to like zoom out to see what your progress has been, which is kind of upsetting for somebody who's right, because I was basically trying to complete this game, and it just wasn't going to happen.
Well, you know what is going to happen, Eric.
No! Okay, go ahead.
Yes. It's closing arguments, I think, isn't it?
Yes, it is the end of the show. The end of the show always
happens.
End of the show.
Too.
Just to remind you all, if you like what we do and you want to help us out, as I explained earlier in the show, it really does help us out, stay operating and everything like that. Please... consider going to patreon.com/indiegameriot. Anywhere from a dollar up is always appreciated. I always suggest $5 because you're sacrificing one coffee a month to help us out that way. The cool logo I mentioned, or I don't know if I mentioned on the show, but the cool logo that you saw at the very beginning is the $25 tier, which I definitely suggest just because you get a new logo every month and it's really cool. And if you happen to run across Keen Maverick on the internet at some point, or you know, if you see him in our,
he's breaking into your house.
Yeah, or so, if he's lurking in your bushes, ask him how he likes it, because he seems to really enjoy that stuff. Anyway, you can also contact us with things that you want to see us feature and people to talk to, all that sort of stuff. You can always chat with us on our Discord server, which you can find the link to that on our website, indiegameround.com. You can also go on our Twitter at IGRPodcast or Facebook.com/IGRPodcast. And of course, email us contact at indiegameround.com. A big thank you to Tim Donnelly for coming on the show this week. You can check his game out, Boss 101, at boss101.com. Check it out on Steam as well. Eric Hunter, Eric M. Hunter, get the M in there for...
get that M right in your face.
You may see things that you don't want to see. Well, then again, you may want to see it. That's okay, too.
But that's your thing.
EricMHunter.net is the website where he posts reviews and has a short podcast, about 15 minutes, I think, of the episodes that you do.
Average, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Talking about mostly about consoles and indies and the interactions and relationships and getting into one and the other, depending on what side you're on, consoles and indies.
It's
and
beautiful. Then,
and nowadays, you know, they seem to be more and more engrossed in each other. Is that the right word? I don't know.
Sure.
Why not? Just make up words on the fly.
Fluid.
Do you guys have anything else you'd like to say?
Live your dreams. Do it.
Should probably play Boss 101.
Play Boss 101.
It's like the thing to do.
Go put it on your wish list if it's not already.
Coming out tomorrow.
Oh, it's on there.
Boy, man, that would be a serious news drop, wouldn't it?
I would shit my pants right
now. I would too! Not as what much as is it? There'd be poo flying out my butt right now.
Like, amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Your beige wall would turn a shade darker.
It would turn a shade. It's already happened.
Well... Say goodbye, gentlemen. There you go.
Classic.
Doodle.